Act 4 of Henry V. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Henry V by William Shakespeare. Act 4. Prologue. Enter Chorus.
Now entertain conjecture of a time when creeping murmur and the pouring dark fills the wide vessel of the universe. From camp to camp through the foul womb of night, the hum of either army stilly sounds, that the fixed sentinels almost receive the secret whispers of each other's watch. Fire answers fire, and through their paly flames each battle sees the other's umbered face. Steed threatens steed, in high and boastful neighs piercing the knight's dull ear, and from the tents the armourers, accomplishing the knights with busy hammers closing rivets up, give dreadful note of preparation. The country cocks do crow, the clocks do toll, and the third hour of drowsy morning name. Proud of their numbers and secure in soul, the confident and overlusty French do the low-rated English play at dice, and chide the cripple, tardy-gaited knight, who, like a foul and ugly witch, doth limp so tediously away. The poor condemned English, like sacrifices, by their watchful fires sit patiently and inly ruminate the morning's danger, and their gesture sad investing, lank lean, cheeks and war-worn coats presenteth them unto the gazing moon, so many horrid ghosts. O, now, who will behold the royal captain of this ruined band, walking from watch to watch, from tent to tent? Let him cry, praise and glory on his head. For forth he goes and visits all his host, bids them good morrow with a modest smile, and calls them brothers, friends, and countrymen. Upon his royal face there is no note how dread an army hath enrounded him, nor doth he dedicate one jot of colour unto the weary and all-watched night, but freshly looks and overbears the taint with cheerful semblance and sweet majesty, that every wretch, pining and pale before, beholding him plucks comfort from his looks. A largesse universal like the sun his liberal eye doth give to every one, thawing cold fear, that mean and gentle all, behold as may unworthiness define, a little touch of Harry in the night. And so our scene must to the battle fly, where, oh, for pity, we shall much disgrace with four or five most vile and ragged foils, right ill-disposed in brawl ridiculous, the name of Agincourt. Yet sit and see, minding true things by what their mockeries be.
Exit. Scene 1. The English Camp at Agincourt. Enter King Henry, Bedford, and Gloucester.
Gloucester, 'tis true that we are in great danger. The greater, therefore, should our courage be. Good morrow, brother Bedford. God Almighty, there is some soul of goodness in things evil, would men observingly distill it out. For our bad neighbour makes us early stirrers, which is both healthful and good husbandry. Besides, they are our outward consciences, and preachers to us all, admonishing that we should dress us fairly for our end. Thus may we gather honey from the weed, and make a moral of the devil himself.
Enter Erpingham.
Good morrow, old Sir Thomas Erpingham. A good soft pillow for that good white head were better than a churlish turf of France.
Not so, my liege. This lodging likes me better, since I may say now I lie like a king.
'Tis good for men to love their present pains upon example, so the spirit is eased. And when the mind is quickened, out of doubt, the organs, though defunct and dead before, break up their drowsy grave and newly move with casted slough and fresh legerity. Lend me thy cloak, Sir Thomas. Brothers both, commend me to the princes in our camp. Do my good morrow to them, and anon desire them and to my pavilion.
We shall, my liege.
Shall I attend your grace?
No, my good knight. Go with my brothers to my lords of England. I and my bosom must debate a while, and then I would no other company.
The Lord in heaven bless thee, noble Harry.
Exeunt all but King Henry.
God a mercy, old heart, thou speak'st cheerfully.
Enter Pistol.
Qui va là?
A friend.
Discuss unto me. Art thou officer, or art thou base, common and popular?
I am a gentleman of a company.
Trailest thou the puissant pike?
Even so, what are you?
As good a gentleman as the emperor.
Then you are a better than the king.
The king's a boar-cock and a art of gold, a lad of life, a imp of fame, of parents good, of fist most valiant. I kiss his dirty shoe, and from the heartstring I love the lovely bully. What is thy name?
Harry Leroy.
Leroy, a Cornish name. Art thou of Cornish crew?
No, I am a Welshman.
Knowst thou Fluellen?
Yes.
Tell him I'll knock his leg about his pate upon St. Davy's Day.
Do not you wear your dagger in your cap that day, lest he knock that about yours.
Art thou his friend?
And his kinsman too.
The fee go for thee, then.
I thank you. God be with you.
My name is Pistol called.
Exit.
It sorts well with your fierceness.
Enter Fluellen and Gower.
Captain Fluellen.
So, in the name of Jesu Christ, speak lower. It is the greatest admiration of the universal world when the true and ancient prerogatives and laws of the wars is not kept. If you would take the pains but to examine the wars of Pompey the Great, you shall find, I warrant you, that there is no tittle-tottle nor pibble-pabble in Pompey's camp. I warrant you, you shall find the ceremonies of the wars, and the cares of it, and the forms of it, and the sobriety of it, and the modesty of it, to be otherwise.
Why, the enemy is loud. You hear him all night.
If the enemy is an ass and a fool and a prating coxcomb, is it meet, think you, that we should also, look you, be an ass and a fool and a prating coxcomb? In your conscience now.
I will speak lower.
I pray you and beseech you that you will.
Exeunt Gower and Fluellen.
Though it appear a little out of fashion, there is much care and valour in this Welshman.
Enter three soldiers, John Bates, Alexander Court, and Michael Williams.
Brother John Bates, is not that the morning which breaks yonder?
I think it be, but we have no great cause to desire the approach of day.
We see yonder the beginning of the day, but I think we shall never see the end of it. Who goes there?
A friend.
Under what captain serve you?
Under Sir Thomas Erpingham.
A good old commander, and a most kind gentleman. I pray you, what thinks he of our estate?
Even as men wrecked upon a sand that looked to be washed off the next tide.
He hath not told his thought to the king?
No, nor it is not meet he should. For though I speak it to you, I think the king is but a man as I am. The violet smells to him as it doth to me. The element shows to him as it doth to me. All his senses have but human conditions. His ceremonies laid by, in his nakedness he appears but a man. And though his affections are higher mounted than ours, yet, when they stoop with the like wing. Therefore, when he sees reason of fears, as we do, his fears out of doubt be of the same relish as ours are. Yet in reason no man should possess him with any appearance of fear, lest he, by showing it, should dishearten his army.
He may show what outward courage he will, but I believe, as cold a night as 'tis, he could wish himself in Thames up to the neck, and so I would he were, and I by him, by all adventures, so we were quit here.
By my troth, I will speak my conscience of the king. I think he would not wish himself anywhere but where he is.
Then I would he were here alone, so should he be sure to be ransomed, and a many poor men's lives saved.
I dare say you love him not so ill to wish him here alone. Howsoever you speak this to feel other men's minds, methinks I could not die anywhere so contented as in the king's company, his cause being just and his quarrel honourable.
That's more than we know.
Aye, or more than we should seek after. For we know enough if we know we are the king's subjects. If his cause be wrong, our obedience to the king wipes the crime of it out of us.
But if the cause be not good, The king himself hath a heavy reckoning to make. When all those legs and arms and heads chopped off in battle shall join together at the latter day and cry all, we died at such a place. Some swearing, some crying for a surgeon, some upon their wives left poor behind them, some upon the debts they owe, some upon their children rawly left. I am afeard there are few die well that die in a battle, for how can they charitably dispose of anything when blood is their argument? Now if these men do not die well, it will be a black matter for the king that led them to it, whom to disobey were against all proportion of subjection.
So if a son that is by his father sent about merchandise do sinfully miscarry upon the sea, the imputation of his wickedness by your rule should be imposed upon his father that sent him. Or if a servant, under his master's command, transporting a sum of money, be assailed by robbers and die in many irreconciled iniquities, you may call the business of the master the author of the servant's damnation. But this is not so. The king is not bound to answer the particular endings of his soldiers, the father of his son, nor the master of his servant, for they purpose not their death when they purpose their services. Besides, there is no king, be his cause never so spotless, if it come to the arbitrament of swords, can try it out with all unspotted soldiers. Some peradventure have on them the guilt of premeditated and contrived murder, some of beguiling virgins with the broken seals of perjury, some, making the wars their bulwark, that have before gored the gentle bosom of peace with pillage and robbery. Now if these men have defeated the law and outrun native punishment, though they can outstrip men, they have no wings to fly from God. War is his beadle, war is vengeance. So that here men are punished for before breach of the king's laws in now the king's quarrel. Where they feared the death, they have borne life away, and where they would be safe, they perish. Then if they die unprovided, no more is the king guilty of their damnation than he was before guilty of those impieties for the which they are now visited. Every subject's duty is the king's, but every subject's soul is his own. Therefore should every soldier in the wars do as every sick man in his bed, wash every mote out of his conscience, and dying so, death is to him advantage, or not dying, the time was blessedly lost wherein such preparation was gained. And in him that escapes it were not sin to think that, making God so free an offer, he let him outlive that day to see his greatness, and to teach others how they should prepare.
'Tis certain, every man that dies ill, the ill upon his own head, the king is not to answer it.
But I do not desire he should answer for me, and yet I determined to fight lustily for him.
I myself heard the king say he would not be ransomed.
Aye, he said so to make us fight cheerfully. But when our throats are cut, he may be ransomed, and we ne'er the wiser.
If I live to see it, I will never trust his word after.
You pay him, then. That's a perilous shot out of an elder gun, that a poor and private displeasure can do against a monarch. He may as well go about to turn the sun to ice, with fanning in his face with a peacock's feather. You'll never trust his word after. Come, 'tis a foolish saying.
Your reproof is something too round. I should be angry with you if the time were convenient.
Let it be a quarrel between us, if you live.
I embrace it.
How shall I know thee again?
Give me any gage of thine, and I will wear it in my bonnet. Then, if ever thou darest acknowledge it, I will make it my quarrel.
Here's my glove. Give me another of thine.
There.
This will I also wear in my cap. If ever thou come to me and say, after tomorrow, this is my glove, by this hand I will take thee a box on the ear.
If ever I live to see it, I will challenge it.
Thou darest as well be hanged.
Well, I will do it, though I take thee in the king's company.
Keep thy word. Fare thee well.
Be friends, you English fools, be friends. We have French quarrels enow, if you could tell how to reckon.
Indeed, the French may lay 20 French crowns to one, they will beat us, for they bear them on their shoulders. But it is no English treason to cut French crowns, and tomorrow the king himself will be a clipper.
Exeunt soldiers.
Upon the king. Let us our lives, our souls, our debts, our careful wives, our children and our sins lay on the king. We must bear all. O hard condition, twin-born with greatness, subject to the breath of every fool whose sense no more can feel but his own ringing. What infinite heart's ease must kings neglect that private men enjoy? And what have kings that privates have not too, save ceremony, save general ceremony? And what art thou, thou idle ceremony? What kind of god art thou that sufferest more of mortal griefs than do thy worshippers? What are thy rents? What are thy comings in? O ceremony, show me but thy worth. What is thy soul of adoration? Art thou aught else but place, degree, and form, creating awe and fear in other men, wherein thou art less happy being feared than they in fearing? What drink'st thou oft, instead of homage sweet, but poisoned flattery? O be sick, great greatness, and bid thy ceremony give thee cure. Think'st thou the fiery fever will go out with titles blown from adulation? Will it give place to flexure and low bending? Canst thou, when thou command'st the beggar's knee, command the health of it? No, thou proud dream, that play'st so subtly with a king's repose. I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the sceptre and the boar, the sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the intertissued robe of gold and pearl, the farced title running for the king, the throne he sits on, nor the tide of pomp that beats upon the high shore of this world. No, not all these, thrice gorgeous ceremony, not all these, laid in bed majestical, can sleep so soundly as the wretched slave, who, with a body filled and vacant mind, gets him to rest, crammed with distressful bread. Never sees horrid night the child of hell, but like a lackey, from the rise to set, sweats in the eye of Phoebus, and all night sleeps in Elysium. Next day after dawn doth rise and help Hyperion to his horse, and follows so the ever-running year with profitable labour to his grave. And but for ceremony, such a wretch, winding up days with toil and nights with sleep, had the forehand and vantage of a king. The slave, a member of the country's peace, enjoys it, but in gross brain little wots what watch the king keeps to maintain the peace, whose hours the peasant best advantages.
Enter Erpingham.
My lord, your nobles, jealous of your absence, seek through your camp to find you.
Good old knight, collect them all together at my tent. I'll be before thee.
I shall do it, my lord.
Exit.
O god of battles, steal my soldiers' hearts, possess them not with fear. Take from them now the sense of reckoning, if the opposed numbers pluck their hearts from them. Not today, O Lord, O not today. Think not upon the fault my father made in compassing the crown. I Richard's body have interred anew, and on it have bestowed more contrite tears than from it issued forced drops of blood. 500 poor I have in yearly pay, who twice a day their withered hands hold up toward heaven to pardon blood. And I have built 2 chantries, where the sad and solemn priests sing still for Richard's soul. More will I do, though all that I can do is nothing worth, since that my penitence comes after all imploring pardon.
Enter Gloucester.
My liege.
My brother Gloucester's voice. I know thy errand. I will go with thee. The day my friends and all things stay for me.
Exeunt. Scene 2. The French Camp. Enter the Dauphin, Orléans, Rambouret, and others.
The sun doth gild our armour. Up, my lords!
Montez à cheval, my horse, varlet, laquais, ah!
O brave spirit!
Viens, les eaux et la terre!
Rien puis, l'air et le feu!
Ciel, cousin Orléans!
Enter Constable.
Now, my lord Constable.
Hark, our steeds for present service nigh!
Mount them and make incision in the hides, that their hot blood may spin in English eyes, and dart them with a superfluous courage. Ha!
What, will you have them weep our horses' blood? How shall we, then, behold their natural tears?
Enter Messenger. The English are embattled, you French peers.
To horse, your gallant princes, straight to horse. Do but behold yon poor and starved band, and your fair show shall suck away their souls, leaving them but the shales and husks of men. There is not work enough for all our hands, scarce blood enough in all their sickly veins, to give each naked curtle-axe a stain, that our French gallant shall to-day draw out, and sheath for lack of sport, let us but blow on them. The vapor of our valor will overturn them. 'Tis positive, gainst all exceptions, lords, that our superfluous lackeys and our peasants, who in unnecessary action swarm about our squares of battle, were enow to purge this field of such a hilding foe, though we upon this mountain's basis by took stand for idle speculation. But that our honors must not, what's to say? A very little let us do, and all is done. Then let the trumpet sound, the tucket's announce, and the note to mount, for our approach shall so much dare the field, that England shall couch down in fear and yield.
Enter Grandpré.
Why do you stay so long, my lords of France? Yon island carrions, desperate of their bones, ill-favoredly become the morning field. Their ragged curtains poorly are let loose, and our air shakes them passing scornfully. Big Mar seems bankrupt in their beggared host, and faintly through a rusty beaver peeps. The horsemen sit like fixed candlesticks, with torch staves in their hand, and their poor jades lob down their heads, dropping the hides and hips, the gum down roping from their pale dead eyes, and in their pale dull mouths the gimel bit lies foul with chewed grass, still and motionless. And their executors, the knavish crows, fly o'er them, all impatient for their hour. Description cannot suit itself in words to demonstrate the life of such a battle in life so lifeless as it shows itself.
They have said their prayers, and they stay for death.
Shall we go send them dinners and fresh suits, and give their fasting horses provender, and after fight with them?
I stay but for my guidon, to the field. I will the banner from a trumpet take, and use it for my haste. Come, come away! The sun is high, and we outwear the day.
Exeunt. Scene 3. The English Camp. Enter Gloucester, Bedford, Exeter, Erpingham, with all his host, Salisbury, and Westmoreland.
Where is the king?
The king himself is rode to view their battle.
Of fighting men, they have full 70,000.
There's 5 to 1. Besides, they are all fresh.
God's arm strike with us. 'Tis a fearful odds. God be with you, Princess Earl. All to my charge. If we no more meet till we meet in heaven, then joyfully, my noble lord of Bedford, my dear lord Gloucester, and my good lord Exeter, and my kind kinsmen, warriors all, adieu.
Farewell, good Salisbury, and good luck go with thee.
Farewell, kind lord. Fight valiantly today. And yet I do thee wrong to mind thee of it, for thou art framed of the firm truth of valour.
Exit Salisbury.
He is full of valour as of kindness, princely in both.
Enter the king.
Oh, that we had now here but 10,000 of those men in England that do no work to-day.
What's he that wishes so? My cousin Westmoreland? No, my fair cousin. If we are marked to die, we are enow to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honour. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. By Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I who doth feed upon my cost. It yearns me not if men my garments wear. Such outward things dwell not in my desires. But if it be a sin to covet honour, I am the most offending soul alive. No, faith, my cause, wish not a man from England. God's peace! I would not lose so great an honour as one man more methinks would share from me for the best hope I have. Oh, do not wish one more. Rather proclaim it, Westmoreland, through my host, that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He that outlives this day, and comes safe home, will stand a tiptoe when the day is named, and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He that shall live this day and see old age, will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbours and say, "Tomorrow is Saint Crispian." Then will he strip his sleeve and show his scars, and say, "These wounds I had on Crispin's day." Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in his mouth as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. This story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispin Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap whilst any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's day.
Re-enter Salisbury.
My sovereign lord, bestir yourself with speed. The French are bravely in a battle set, and will, with all expedience, charge upon us.
All things are ready, if our minds be so.
Perish the man whose mind is backward now.
Thou dost not wish more help from England, coz?
God's will, my liege, would you and I alone, without more help, could fight this royal battle.
Why, now thou hast unwished 5,000 men, which likes me better than to wish us one. You know your places. God be with you all.
Tucket. Enter Montjoy.
Once more I come to know of thee, King Harry. If for thy ransom thou wilt now compound, before thy most assured overthrow. For certainly thou art so near the gulf, thou needs must be englutted. Besides, in mercy, the constable desires thee, thou wilt mind thy followers of repentance, that their souls may make a peaceful and a sweet retire from off these fields, where, wretches, their poor bodies must lie and fester.
Who hath sent thee now?
The constable of France.
I pray thee, bear my former answer back. Bid them achieve me, and then sell my bones. Good God, why should they mock poor fellows thus? The man that once did sell the lion's skin while the beast lived was killed with hunting him. A many of our bodies shall no doubt find native graves, upon the which, I trust, shall witness live in brass of this day's work. And those that leave their valiant bones in France, dying like men, though buried in your dunghills, they shall be famed, for there the sun shall greet them, and draw their honours reeking up to heaven, leaving their earthly parts to choke your clime, the smell whereof shall breed a plague in France. Mark, then, abounding valour in our English, that, being dead, like to the bullets grazing, break out into a second course of mischief, killing in relapse of mortality. Let me speak proudly. Tell the constable we are but warriors for the working day. Our gayness and our guilt are all besmirched with rainy marching in the painful field. There's not a piece of feather in our host. Good argument, I hope, we will not fly, and time hath worn us into slovenry. But by the mass our hearts are in the trim, and my poor soldiers tell me, yet ere night they'll be in fresher robes, or they will pluck the gay new coats or the French soldiers' heads and turn them out of service. If they do this, as, if God please, they shall, my ransom then will soon be levied. Herald, save thou thy labour. Come thou no more for ransom, gentle herald. They shall have none, I swear, but these my joints, which, if they have as I will leave em then, shall yield them little. Tell the constable.
I shall, King Harry, and so fare thee well. Thou never shalt hear herald any more.
Exit.
I fear thou'lt once more come again for ransom.
Enter York.
My lord, most humbly on my knee I beg the leading of the Varward.
Take it, brave York. Now, soldiers, march away, and how thou pleasest, God, dispose the day.
Exeunt. Scene 4. The Field of Battle. Alarum. Excursions. Enter Pistol, French Soldier, and Boy.
Ye old cur.
Je pense que vous êtes gentilhomme de bonne qualité.
Qualité calmier castoure mai. Art thou a gentleman? What is thy name? Discuss.
Oh, Seigneur Dieu.
Oh, Seigneur Dieu should be a gentleman. Perpend my words, O Seigneur Dieu, and mark. O Seigneur Dieu, thou diest on point of fox. Except, O Seigneur, thou do give to me a egregious ransom.
Oh, prenez miséricorde, ayez pitié de moi.
Moi shall not serve. I will have 40 mois, or I will fetch thy rim out at thy throat in drops of crimson blood.
Est-il impossible d'échapper la force de ton bras?
Brass, cur, thou damned and luxurious mountain goat, offerest me brass?
Oh, pardonnez-moi.
Sayest thou me so? Is that a ton of mois? Come hither, boy. Ask me this slave in French, what is his name?
Écoutez, comment êtes-vous appelé?
Monsieur le Fer.
He said his name is Master Fer.
Master Fur. I'll fur him, and furk him, and ferret him. Discuss the same in French unto him.
I do not know the French for fur, and ferret, and furk.
Bid him prepare, for I will cut his throat.
Que dit-il, monsieur?
Il me commande de vous dire que vous faites vous prêt, car ce soldat ici est disposé tout à cette heure de couper votre gorge.
Here we couple a gorge, permafoy. Peasant, unless thou give me crowns, brave crowns, or mangled shalt thou be by this my sword.
Oh, je vous supplie, pour l'amour de Dieu, me pardonner. Je suis gentilhomme de bonne maison. Gardez ma vie et je vous donnerai 200 écus.
What are his words?
He prays you to save his life. He is a gentleman of a good health. And, for his ransom, he will give you 200 crowns.
Tell him my fury shall abate, and I the crowns will take.
Petit monsieur, que dit-il?
Encore qu'il est contre son jurement de pardonner aucun prisonnier, néanmoins, pour les écus que vous l'avez promis, il est content de vous donner la liberté, le franchissement.
Sur mes genoux, je vous donne 1000 remerciements, et je m'estime heureux que je suis tombé entre les mains d'un chevalier, je pense, le plus brave, vaillant et très distingué seigneur d'Angleterre.
Expound unto me, boy.
He gives you, upon his nerve, 1,000 thanks, and he esteems himself happy that he has fallen into the hand of one, as he thinks, the most brave, valorous, and thrice worthy signor of any land.
As I suck blood, I will some mercy show. Follow me.
Suivez-vous le grand capitaine.
Exeunt Pistol and French Soldier.
I did never know so full of voice issue from so empty an heart. But the saying is true. The empty vessel makes the greatest sound. Bottles and nymphs are 10 times more value than this roaring devil. If held play, that every one may pierce nail with a wooden dagger, and they are both angered. And so will this be, if he durst steal anything adventurously. I must say with a lackey, with a luggage of our camp, the French might have a good prey of us, if he knew of it, or there is none to guard it but by.
Exit. Scene 5. Another part of the field. Enter Constable, Orléans, Bourbon, Dauphin, and Rambourg.
Oh, diable!
Oh, seigneur, le jour est perdu, tout est perdu!
Mort de ma vie! All is confounded, all! Reproach and everlasting shame sits mocking in our plumes. Oh, méchante fortune! Do not run away.
A short alarm.
Why, all our ranks are broke!
Oh, perdurable shame! Let's stab ourselves. Be these the wretches that we played at dice for?
Is this the king we sent to for his ransom?
Shame, an eternal shame, nothing but shame. Let us die in honour, once more back again. And he that will not follow Bourbon now, let him go hence, and with his cap in hand, like a base peasant.
Pander, hold the chamber door whilst my slave, no gentler than my dog, his fairest daughter, is contaminated.
Disorder that hath spoiled us, friend us now. Let us on heaps go offer up our lives.
We are enow yet living in the field to smother up the English in our throngs, if any order might be thought upon.
The devil take order now, out of the throng. Let life be short, else shame will be too long.
Exeunt. Scene 6. Another part of the field. Alarums. Enter King Henry and forces, Exeter and others.
Well have we done, thrice valiant countrymen. But all's not done. Yet keep the French the field.
The Duke of York commends him to your majesty.
Lives he, good uncle? Thrice within this hour I saw him down, thrice up again in fighting. From helmet to the spur all blood he was.
In which array, brave soldier, doth he lie, larding the plain, and by his bloody side, yoke fellow to his honour-owing wounds, the noble Earl of Suffolk also lies. Suffolk first died, and York, all haggled over, comes to him wherein gore he lay insteeped, and takes him by the beard, kisses the gashes that bloodily did spawn upon his face, and cries aloud, "Tarry, dear cousin Suffolk, my soul shall thine keep company to heaven. Tarry, sweet soul, for mine. Then fly abreast, as in this glorious and well-foughten field we kept together in our chivalry." Upon these words I came and cheered him up. He smiled me in the face, wrought me his hand, and with a feeble gripe says, "Dear my lord, commend my service to me sovereign." So did he turn, and over Suffolk's neck he threw his wounded arm and kissed his lips, and so, espoused to death, with blood he sealed a testament of noble ending love. The pretty and sweet manner of it forced those waters from me, which I would have stopped, but I had not so much of man in me, and all my mother came into my eyes and gave me up to tears.
I blame you not. For hearing this, I must perforce compound with mistful eyes, or they will issue too.
Alarum.
But hark, what new alarum is this same? The French have reinforced their scattered men. Then every soldier kill his prisoners. Give the word through.
Exeunt. Scene 7. Another part of the field. Enter Fluellen and Gower.
Do kill the boys and the luggage. 'Tis expressly against the law of arms. 'Tis as arrant a piece of knavery, mark you now, as can be offered. In your conscience now, is it not?
'Tis certain there's not a boy left alive, and the cowardly rascals that ran from the battle had done this slaughter. Besides, they have burned and carried away all that was in the king's tent, wherefore the king, most worthily, hath caused every soldier to cut his prisoner's throat. Oh, 'tis a gallant king.
Aye, he was born at Monmouth, Captain Gower. What call you the town's name where Alexander the Pig was born?
Alexander the Great.
Why, I pray you, is not Pig great? The Pig, or the Great, or the Mighty, or the Huge, or the Magnanimous, are all one reckoning, save the phrase is a little variations.
I think Alexander the Great was born in Macedon. His father was called Philip of Macedon, as I take it.
I think it is in Macedon where Alexander is born. I tell you, Captain, if you look in the maps of the earld, I warrant you shall find in the comparisons between Macedon and Monmouth that the situations, look you, is both alike. There is a river in Macedon, and there is also, moreover, a river at Monmouth. It is called Wye at Monmouth, but it is out of my brains what is the name of the other river. But 'tis all one, 'tis alike as my fingers is to my fingers, and there is salmons in both. If you mark Alexander's life well, Harry of Monmouth's life is come after it in different well, for there is figures in all things. Alexander, God knows, and you know, in his rages and his furies and his wraths and his choleurs, and his moods, and his displeasures, and his indignations, and also being a little intoxicates in his brains, did in his ails and his angers, look you, kill his best friend, Clytus.
Our king is not like him in that. He never killed any of his friends.
It is not well done, mark you now. Take the tales out of my mouth. Ere it is made and finished, I speak but in the figures and comparisons of it. As Alexander killed his friend Clytus, being in his ales and his cups, so also Harry Monmouth, being in his right wits and his good judgments, turned away the fat knight with the great belly doublet. He was full of jests and jipes and knaveries and mocks. I have forgot his name.
Sir John Falstaff.
That is he. I'll tell you, there is good men born at Monmouth.
Here comes his majesty.
Alarum. Enter King Henry and forces, Warwick, Gloucester, Exeter, and others.
I was not angry since I came to France until this instant. Take a trumpet, herald. Ride thou unto the horsemen on yon hill. If they will fight with us, bid them come down. Avoid the field. They do offend our sight. If they'll do neither, we will come to them, and make them scur away as swift as stones enforced from the old Assyrian slings. Besides, we'll cut the throats of those we have, and not a man of them that we shall take shall taste our mercy. Go, and tell them so.
Enter Mountjoy.
Here comes the herald of the French, my liege.
His eyes are humbler than they used to be.
How now, what means this, herald? Know'st thou not that I have fined these bones of mine for ransom? Com'st thou again for ransom?
No, great king. I come to thee for charitable license, that we may wander o'er this bloody field to look our dead, and then to bury them, to sort our nobles from our common men. For many of our princes, woe the while, lie drowned and soaked in mercenary blood. So do our vulgar drench their peasant limbs in blood of princes, and their wounded steeds fret fetlock deep in gore, and with wild rage yerk out their armed heels at their dead masters, killing them twice. Oh, give us leave, great king, to view the field in safety, and dispose of their dead bodies.
I tell thee truly, herald, I know not if the day be ours or no, for yet a many of your horsemen peer and gallop o'er the field.
The day is yours.
Praised be God, and not our strength for it. What is this castle called that stands hard by?
They call it Agincourt.
Then call we this the field of Agincourt, fought on the day of Crispin Crispianus.
You were grandfather of famous memory, and please your majesty, and your great-uncle Edward, the Black Prince of Wales, as I have read in the chronicles, fought a most brave battle here in France.
They did, Llewellyn.
Your majesty says very true. If your majesty is remembered of it, the Welshmen did good service in a garden where leeks did grow, wearing leeks in their Monmouth caps, which your majesty know to this hour is an honourable badge of the service. And I do believe your majesty takes no scorn to wear the leek upon St. Tavy's Day.
I wear it for a memorable honour. For I am Welsh, you know, good countrymen.
All the water in Wye cannot wash your majesty's Welsh blood out of your body, I can tell you that. God bless it and preserve it, as long as it pleases his grace and his majesty too.
Thanks, good my countrymen.
By Jesu, I am your majesty's countryman. I care not who know it. I will confess it to all the world. I need not to be ashamed of your majesty, praised be God, so long as your majesty is an honest man.
God keep me so. Our heralds go with him. Bring me just notice of the numbers dead on both our parts. Call yonder fellow hither.
Points to Williams. Exeunt heralds with Mountjoy.
Soldier, you must come to the king.
Soldier, why wearest thou that glove in thy cap?
And please your majesty, 'tis the gage of one that I should fight withal, if he be alive.
An Englishman.
And please your majesty, a rascal that swaggered with me last night, who, if alive and ever dare to challenge this glove, I have sworn to take him a box of the ear. or if I can see my glove in his cap, which he swore as he was a soldier he would wear if alive, I will strike it out soundly.
What think you, Captain Fluellen? Is it fit this soldier keep his oath?
He is a craven and a villain else, and please your majesty in my conscience.
It may be his enemy is a gentleman of great sort, quite from the answer of his degree.
Though he be as good a gentleman as the devil is, as Lucifer and Beelzebub himself, it is necessary, look your grace, that he keep his vow and his oath. If he be perjured, see you now, his reputation is as arrant a villain and a jack-sauce as ever his black shoe trod upon God's ground and his earth, in my conscience, la.
Then keep that vow, sirrah, when thou meetest the fellow.
So I will, my liege, as I live.
Who servest thou under?
Under Captain Gower, my liege.
Gower is a good captain, and is good knowledge and literature in the wars.
Call him hither to me, soldier.
I will, my liege.
Exit.
Here, Fluellen, wear thou this favour for me, and stick it in thy cap. When Alençon and myself were down together, I plucked this glove from his helm. If any man challenge this, he is a friend to Alençon, and an enemy to our person. If thou encounter any such, apprehend him, and thou dost me love.
Your grace doeth me as great honours as can be desired in the hearts of his subjects. I would fain see the man that has but two legs that shall find himself aggrieved at this glove. That is all, but I would fain see it once and please God of his grace that I might see.
Nurse thou Gower?
He is my dear friend, and please you.
Pray thee, go seek him, and bring him to my tent.
I will fetch him.
Exit.
My lord of Warwick, and my brother Gloucester, follow Fluellen closely at the heels. The glove which I have given him for a favour may happily purchase him a box of the ear. It is the soldier's. I, by bargain, should wear it myself. Follow, good cousin Warwick. If that the soldier strike him, as I judge by his blunt bearing he will keep his word, some sudden mischief may arise of it. For I do know Fluellen valiant, and, touched with choler, hot as gunpowder, and quickly will return an injury. Follow, and see there be no harm between them. Go you with me, uncle of Exeter.
Exeunt. Scene 8, before King Henry's pavilion. Enter Gower and Williams.
I warrant it is to knight you, captain.
Enter Fluellen.
God's will and his pleasure, captain. I beseech you now, come apace to the king. There is more good toward you, peradventure, than is in your knowledge to dream of.
Sir, know you this glove?
Know the glove? I know the glove is glove.
I know this, and thus I challenge it.
Strikes him.
Oh! S'blood, an arrant traitor as any in the universal world, or in France, or in England.
How now, sir, you villain?
Do you think I'll be forsworn?
Stand away, Captain Gower. I will give treason his payment into ploughs, I warrant you.
I am no traitor.
That's a lie in thy throat. I charge you in his majesty's name. Apprehend him. He's a friend of the Duke Alençon's.
Enter Warwick and Gloucester.
How now? How now? What's the matter?
My lord of Warwick, here is, praised be God for it, a most contagious treason come to light, look you, as you shall desire in a summer's day. Oh, here's his majesty.
Enter King Henry and Exeter.
How now? What's the matter?
My liege, here is a villain and a traitor that, look your grace, has struck the glove which your majesty is take out of the helmet of Alençon.
My liege, this was my glove. Here is the fellow of it. And he that I gave it to in change promised to wear it in his cap. I promised to strike him if he did. I met this man with my glove in his cap, and I have been as good as my word.
Your majesty here now, save in your majesty's manhood, what an arrant, rascally, beggarly, lousy knave it is. I hope your majesty is bear me testimony and witness, and will avouchment that this is the glove of Alençon that your majesty is give me, in your conscience now.
Give me thy glove, soldier. Look, here is the fellow of it. "'Twas I, indeed, thou promisedst to strike, and thou hast given me most bitter terms."
"'And please your majesty, let his neck answer for it, if there is any martial law in the world."
"'How canst thou make me satisfaction?"
"'All offences, my lord, come from the heart. Never came any from mine that might offend your majesty."
"'It was ourself thou didst abuse."
"'Your majesty came not like yourself. You appeared to me but as a common man. Witness the night, your garments, your lowliness, and what your highness suffered under that shape. I beseech you, take it for your own fault and not mine. For had you been as I took you for, I made no offence. Therefore, I beseech your highness, pardon me."
"Here, Uncle Exeter, fill this glove with crowns and give it to this fellow. Keep it, fellow, and wear it for an honour in thy cap till I do challenge it. Give him the crowns. And, Captain, you must needs be friends with him."
"By this day and this light, the fellow has metal enough in his belly. Hold, there is 12 pence for you, and I pray you to serve God, and keep you out of prawls and prabbles and quarrels and dissensions, and I warrant you it is the better for you."
"I will none of your money."
"It is with a good will. I can tell you, it will serve to mend your shoes. Come, wherefore should you be so bashful? Your shoes is not so good. 'Tis a good shilling, I warrant you, or I will change it."
Enter an English herald.
"Now, herald, are the dead numbered?"
"Here is the number of the slaughtered French."
"What prisoners of good sort are taken, uncle?"
"Charles, Duke of Orleans, nephew to the king. John, Duke of Bourbon, and Lord Boucicault. Of other lords and barons, knights and squires, full 1,500, besides common men."
"This note doth tell me of 10,000 French that in the fields lie slain. Of princes, in this number, and nobles bearing banners, there lie dead 126. Added to these of knights, esquires, and gallant gentlemen, 8,400, of the which 500 were but yesterday dubbed knights. So that, in these 10,000 they have lost, there are but 1,600 mercenaries. The rest are princes, barons, lords, knights, squires, and gentlemen of blood and quality. The names of those their nobles that lie dead: Charles Delabreth, High Constable of France; Jacques of Chatillon, Admiral of France; the Master of the Crossbows, Lord Rambours; Great Master of France, the brave Sir Guisha Dauphin; John, Duke of Alençon; Anthony, Duke of Brabant; the brother of the Duke of Burgundy, and Edward, Duke of Bar; of lusty earls, Grandpré and Roussy; Fossenberg and Foix; Beaumont and Marl; Vaudemont and Lestrale. Here was a royal fellowship of death. Where is the number of our English dead? Edward, the Duke of York; the Earl of Suffolk; Sir Richard Ketley; Davy Gam, Esquire. None else of name, and of all other men but 25. O God, thy arm was here, and not to us, but to thy arm alone ascribe we all. When, without stratagem, but in plain shock and even play of battle, was ever known so great and little loss on one part and on the other? Take it, God, for it is none but thine."
"'Tis wonderful."
"Come, go we in procession to the village, and be it death proclaimed through our host to boast of this, or take the praise from God which is his only."
"Is it not lawful, and please your majesty, to tell how many is killed?"
"Yes, captain, but with this acknowledgment, that God fought for us."
"Yes, my conscience, he did us great good."
"Do we all holy rites. Let there be sung Non Nobis and Te Deum, the dead with charity enclosed in clay, and then to Calais, and to England then, where ne'er from France arrived more happy men."
Exeunt. End of Act 4.